When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Two Chairs No Waiting, episode number 232, Touch of the Pip. Two Chairs No Waiting is brought to you each week by the fine folks over at Weaver's Department Store. Drop by Weaver's and pick up the Mayberry board game, Mayberryopoly. They've got that over at Weaver's. They've got all kinds of wonderful books, a Barney Fife necktie, the complete season set of all 8 seasons of the Andy Griffith Show, plus more and more. So head over to weaversdepartmentstore.com. Two Chairs No Waiting is also brought to you by donations from listeners just like you. The executive producer of episode 232 is my wife, Jan Newsom. Thank you, Jan. Hello, everybody. I'm Alan Newsom, your host for Two Chairs No Waiting, and I am so, so glad to be back with you here in Mayberry this evening because last week I was unable to do the show because I had to take my son to trombone lessons, and on the way home from trombone lessons, we had an event. A car wreck is what we had. That's what that was. Yeah, we had a car wreck. Somebody hit us and rear-ended us, just like Goober when, when he got the whiplash, because Floyd told him to hold his arms up right to his chest and put his hands on his chest there and try to lift his elbows over his head and he'd try to touch them together. Well, I can't do that either, so I may have a little whiplash. I don't know. But it could be psychosomatic. I don't know, but I'm just thankful to be here with you in Mayberry this week because this is a lot more fun than getting rear-ended in a car accident. So thanks for letting me be with you. In tonight's episode, we're going to talk about A Touch of the Pip. Now, what we're talking about a couple of weeks ago, I did a podcast about our friend Harvey Bullock. He's one of the writers of the Andy Griffith Show, wrote several episodes in the 30s. The number would be of episodes of the Andy Griffith Show that he wrote. And if you want to find out some of them he did, I can tell you that the one we're going to talk about right now is Opie the Birdman. And you can head over to mayberry.info and do searches and look for any episode of the Andy Griffith Show. There's write-ups there telling you when it was, what episode it was filmed, what number. Like this one was filmed number 101 and it aired as number 96. His original air date was September the 30th, 1963, and the director of this episode was Dick Crenna. Dick Crenna from The Real McCoys. You remember him? He's also Rambo's commanding officer in the movies Rambo. Anyway, Harvey had written to me with real paper and sent in an answer that he had gotten a question from the folks on the Who's Been Messing Up the Bulletin Board Digest. And this was back in 1999 when he sent it to me. He says, "Dear Alan, Teresa West is an obviously devoted tagster. Recently wrote you referring to a scene at the Taylor table in Opie the Birdman. Opie seems to have lost his appetite because he accidentally killed the mother songbird. Aunt B minimizes the concern by saying the boy probably has the pip. The question, what is the pip? Now, do you guys remember that episode? Let's hear some of this scene. This is right after Andy had just got home and they were having dinner at the table, and Andy and Aunt Bee and Opie are sitting there and Opie's just playing with his food.
More sweet potatoes, Andy.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've dined again, Aunt Bee. This meal ought to be at the county fair wrapped up in about 4 miles of blue ribbon. Potatoes, Opie. You ain't hardly touched your plate. You sick?
Wonder if it's a touch of the pip. Miss Edwards says there's a lot of it going around.
Mm. No, I feel fine.
Are you sure I'm missing a treat?
More rolls, Andy?
Mm-hmm.
So that scene continues on, and Opie ends up leaving the table once he finds out that he did indeed kill once they mention that he killed him. Anyway, what is the pip was the question. And Harvey wrote this in. He said, I first heard the word from my wife, who grew up in Michigan, and claimed it was common usage there, and a very helpful catch-all description of any ailment from general malaise to awful vapors. If anyone caught a disease for which they knew no medical term, they referred to it as a pip. And everyone was satisfied that they had the situation nicely covered. It was also used to describe an ailing pet, like a dog or a cat or hamster, etc., but probably not a goldfish, he said. I was determined to one day write of a pip, but I wasn't sure the HMOs would cover it. And it also was in the lyrics of a country song, Life do get justice, don't it? So anyway, he had written in some more words and little handwritten notes here. And I've got several of these where Harvey had done that. So I thought you guys might enjoy that. Hearing where Aunt B came up with.
I wonder if it's a touch of the pip.
A touch of the pip. So I thought you might enjoy that. All right, so I got some more stuff here too. So let me grab my next pile of notes. Now, Harvey was visiting with Everett Greenbaum and some folks like that. You know, he would visit with them and get answers from them as well. Everett Greenbaum, another writer from the Andy Griffith Show. If I think I told you about that last week, that Everett was another prolific writer. And so he had written or gotten a question to take to Everett. And he wrote, how long does it take to write an episode of the Andy Griffith Show? Now, I believe we may have covered that last time, but this is a different answer. Everett says, the variable here is story. So how long does it take to write an episode of the Andy Griffith Show? The variable here is the story. Finding one is the toughest part of writing. Sometimes it takes a week, staring at the ceiling, pitching half-baked ideas to each other. Nothing seems to work. Then one suggestion starts to click. Cautiously, we experiment, expanding the notion. Things seem to be working. You know, quick, get this stuff down so we can make an outline. That's what he said. After producer Aaron Rubin amends and accepts the outline, we usually were able to bring the completed story of 40 pages in about 40 hours. The strength of the story dictates the pace. A well-conceived story types up fast. When we wrote My Fair Ernest T. Bass using the Aegis Pygmalion premise, it was done in record time. We were able to use marvelous dialogue close to the original and backed by a solid and familiar plot line. Heaven. That's what he wrote. Now, I'm going to skip around a little bit because as I was reading through these, trying to get the right answers or get some of these answers for you. Let's see if I can find my right notebook here. Yeah, there was he mentioned a Pygmalion story. You know, that's a famous idea here. There was a question that was written to him back in, I guess this was May 1999 when he asked these questions. Somebody had been asking questions about did episodes or did different TV series borrow ideas from other series? Like, for instance, you might know that there's some episodes of Gomer Pyle or maybe even RFD, that are very similar to episodes of The Andy Griffith Show. So the question was, did they ever actually use those kind of stories? Well, they were saying no, never, both Everett and Harvey. And one of the things that he said was, are there other reasons similar episodes pop up? And they answered this. They said, there are many factors at work here. One theory holds that all plots are merely variations of 9 or 10 basic stories. He lists them as The Gift of the Magi, Pygmalion, which he mentioned was Fair Ernest T. Bass, Cyrano, Fish Out of Water, Invisible Suitors, Windfalls, etc. Thus, there are bound to be similarities between stories since all draw from a common source. It's a bit esoteric, I don't think it was the complete answer. It's impossible for every writer and every producer to know stories that are being filmed on other series, so they have no way of knowing that they are duplicating or being duplicated. Another thought, sometimes the very same story may occur by chance in two different writers. Strange as it seems, this happens more than you would think. Once I pitched a story idea to Aaron Rubin, who was then producing the new Andy Griffith Show. My story centered around an old brass cannon in the town square. Aaron stopped my pitch and stared at me and said, "Is this a joke, isn't it?" I was completely puzzled. "What joke?" Aaron went on to say that Jim Frizzell and Everett Greenbaum had just left his office pitching an identical story. That's what Harvey's written. So summing it up, no collusion between sitcoms, but similar stories do pop up. So I thought that was interesting. The Pygmalion reference made me remember this particular note. So basically what Harvey and Everett are saying, because I've noticed it over the years, that there are a lot of stories that are very similar on different shows, and you'll see them a lot. You know, the It's a Wonderful Life story, they do that on a whole bunch of different shows. I mean, and things like that happen a lot. Another thing he sent me here, just as a quick little bit, I've got a headline from the Los Angeles Times for May 17th, 1999. This is the Section G, which has got advice, humor, comics, and horoscopes and stuff. A thing in here that he cut out and sent to me says, "Best supermarket tabloid headline." And here's the headline. "The number one name for newborns in Nepal, Andy Griffith." So in Nepal, back in 1999, in May, the number one name for newborns in Nepal was Andy Griffith. So I thought that was kind of cool. Harvey sent that to me as well. So I have all kinds of things like this, and I thought you would enjoy hearing some of these ideas here. So let's go back to this one from May 1999. The question to the author, to the writers that Everett Greenbaum is writing answers to. He says, the question is, have the actors ever deviated from the script? His answer is, "The Andy Griffith Show sometimes had a few last minute changes, but they were minor. The performers had read the script so many times that they were in a rhythm with each other, so ad-libs were unnecessary. They stuck to the material." Question: Didn't the actors ever break up laughing? The answer he gives is, that did happen when filming My Fair Ernest T. Bass. Andy and Barney were coaching Ernest T. on how to behave that night at snobbish Mrs. Wiley's party. They set up an entrance scene for Ernest T. to practice good manners, which we all know. His amenities, he's going to practice them. And Barney enters as another party guest. He moves his lips, making words, but purposely doesn't make a sound so Ernest T. won't be distracted. You remember that? "I can't hear your amenities," that one. Andy stares at Barney and says, "Barney, what's up with all the mouth work?" "It's the amenities," he says. Ernest T. grabs that word. "Yep, amenities, that's what it is." The three of them convulsed in laughter. "It's amenities." And then the scene built into dizzying heights and went uncontrolled through the roof with inspired ad-libs. Doesn't sound hilarious, does it? Guess you had to be there. So I can just say, it's amenities. Wouldn't you love to see that? I wish they'd had clips and outtakes of that kind of stuff. That would be awesome. All right, so next question was, are people impressed when you're introduced as a writer for the Andy Griffith Show? Now, again, I think we've had this question before when I answered this, but this is a different answer. Everett says, well, of course, it varies. I was more concerned making a living than my celebrity status. Strangely, I find more recognition today than when the show was being produced. And the rerun watchers are an astounding mix. Professional people who can quote dialogue, clergymen, engineers, teachers, and would you believe actors? Many consider Barney's portrayals something to study, and they're right. Isn't that cool? Question, Was there a strong personal bond between Andy and Don Knotts? And Everett says, very strong. They were inseparable backstage. They truly enjoyed each other's company and had the highest regard for the other's performance. Andy once said that, I've watched Don Knotts turn into Barney Fife right before my eyes every day. And I've heard that Andy said that as well. So, and I think I've told y'all before, I saw that myself, didn't understand it, but Don Knotts is a very quiet man. And I was fortunate enough doing Floyd to be able to see backstage and see Don just sitting around. And he actually had on his salt and pepper suit this one time that I was back there with him. And he was very quiet. Of course, nobody was bothering him. But when they start to introduce him and his name, he stood up straighter and was standing at the edge of the stage and just walked out on that stage and just took control. It was an amazing thing to see him turn it on. And I'm sure that's what Andy's referring to, is amazing. And our final question for this evening, what thoughts do you have watching reruns? That was the question. What thoughts do you have watching reruns? And Everett Greenbaum, the writer, he says, Now that health matters keep me at home, because he was ill at the time, I see more episodes than ever before. It will come as no surprise that I marvel most at watching Barney Fife grow into a real person, just as Andy did. We could hear his voice as we wrote his lines. Isn't that neat? Can you imagine being a writer and you're writing the words that Andy and Don and Goober and Howard and Otis and Floyd deliver? Can you imagine that? Can you imagine as you're writing, you just have their voice in your mind and being able to see all that's going on right there with them? I just can't even really imagine that. But these great men, you know, Harvey Bullock and Everett Greenbaum, both had that wonderful opportunity to write and then see actors like those actually perform the words that they had written. It had to be a great experience for them, and it certainly has been for us. I know that. So, well, folks, that's all I have for you this evening. I want to thank you for coming here in Mayberry, and I'd love to hear from you. If you'll give me a call, you can call me at 888-684-8415 and leave a comment. You can email me at floyd@imayberry.com, or you can head over to twochairsnowaiting.com and leave a message there. Hey, when you're at twochairsnowaiting.com looking at our show notes, check out the links. Sign up for our mailing list. That way, if anything ever happens to the podcast or anything, I can contact you directly and let you know what's going on. I try to do that through Facebook, but it'd be better if we had the mailing list. Otherwise, not going to bother you too much with that mailing list. But, folks, I have enjoyed my time here in Mayberry with you, and I hope you've enjoyed it too. We'll see you next week on Two Chairs No Waiting. Goodbye, everybody.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.